Hello, it's Mr. Chaz, and I'm letting you know that there's two big ways that you can reach me. The first way to get one-on-one coaching is to go to www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz and sign up for one-on-one coaching. The second way is to subscribe to my Instagram, and you can send me messages through there, and I will prioritize your messages if you are subscribed. I hope to connect with you soon and hope you have a great day. Bye.
Barreling towards me. So I like bend down, brace for impact. I can tell he's upset. Like he's all sweaty and red, and his hair stuck to his forehead with sweat, and he looks like he's, not okay. So I scoop him up and I say something like, "You're having a really rough time." And as I do that, he arches his back. He takes his little hand and he plows my face, punches me right in the nose, which I had previously broken my nose. So when you get a previously broken nose smashed again, it actually really hurts. So there I am trying to hang on to myself, and I've got like the snotty nose thing happening. And I immediately drop a flag for him from a space of relationship. A flag is five words or less. Gentle hands. I let him know, like, well, that's done. And
what's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
I'm moving into connection now. So we're going to retreat to relationship. Gentle hands, I remind him, and you're really frustrated. No, I'm mad.
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership Parenting Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your parenting, teaching, or leadership journey. And today, I just got a feeling. I know I say this a lot, but I really, this is one of those episodes where I'm serious that this is going to be a really special episode that is probably going to give you lots of feels, lots of tips, and may even be a little bit transformative for you, maybe even for me. So, but without further ado, let me let Dr. Vanessa introduce herself so we can dive into this conversation and give you lots and lots of value in the little bit of time that we have here today. Go ahead, introduce yourself.
Amazing. I'm truly so thrilled to be here. And if I had to introduce myself, I would start by saying my favorite color is yellow and has been since I was like 4 years old. I am a registered psychologist. I am an author. I am a parenting educator. And bigger than all of that combined, I am a mom to two boys. My eldest will turn 19 in just a couple of weeks, and my youngest is 15, and they have been my greatest teachers all the way along this journey.
Okay. And we're going to find out a little bit about those lessons that they've taught you. But first, I want to hear just kind of your generally, like, what's your parenting philosophy? Let's just start there.
I really do believe at this stage in my life, and it's changed a lot of times, Mr. Chaz, I'll tell you over the years. Where I'm at right now is I think about two big pieces when asked that question. The first is that I am a developmentalist, which means that I believe wholeheartedly in the science of human and child development, how the brain grows, how the heart grows, how emotions come on board, the study of human development. And under that umbrella, I am also deeply invested in the science of relationship, that it is a part of being a developmentalist. To understand how children grow, it inherently involves understanding the foundational importance of relationship, connection, all of those kinds of things in order for kids to grow the way that nature intended. So that's number one. I'm a developmentalist. Number two, I also think that consciousness is incredibly important because I know for myself, I, went to grad school for 13 years. I've been at this parenting gig now for about 19 years. I have been in this career now for just over 20 years. So I know a lot of the things. And I get frustrated with my children, and I yell at my children, and I get my feelings hurt by my children. And all of the, and I think, what is going on? Like, why am I yelling, shouting at my kids when I know that that is not the way to go? I know it, but I haven't translated that into a heart language just yet. And so for me, consciousness, which is, making that which is unconscious conscious, bringing all of our internal baggage and woundedness and all of that stuff underneath the surface up to the light of day, letting light shine on it so that we can make it conscious and understand why we're having those kinds of reactions to our children, to our partners, to our coworkers. And in that, we can create some new connections, we can rewire, we can develop the miracle of a new perception, and we can live and do life differently.
Okay. So what I kind of heard there is that, one, you believe in the science of relationships and the brain and development. And two, you also believe in the importance of really internalizing that and not just knowing the science, but being able to really almost kind of let the science become a part of you and being able to understand how you kind of fit into the context of all that science. Is that, did I get that about right?
You got it. Like, it comes the doing, because everybody wants to know, well, what do I do when a kid, blah, 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 blah. Or what do I would do when a student, da, 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 da. Everybody wants to know what to do, but the doing part of life comes from the being. You have to have your beingness sorted, and flowing from that will be those actions. And so those two things have to, they work hand in hand. And so it's a pretty incredible thing to have it be informed.
Okay. So before first off script thing, why can't we just get the tips? Why can't you just tell me what to do? So you've been there before, you've had all this experience. Why can't you just tell me what to do, what to say to my child, how to react when they say this, how to respond when they do this? Mm-hmm. Why do I have to change my being? That sounds like a lot of work. Like, all right, yeah. Why can't you just tell me what to do and let me do it and we be done with it?
Right. And I really did think, like, as a brand new graduate and an early career psychologist, I actually thought that that's how it worked. Yeah. And then what I would see is that for myself as a parent and also my parent clients, even with the best of intentions, I could feed them the script. I could give them the tips. I could tell them the 1, 2, 3 steps to get from meltdown mode to calm mode. Like, I could tell you all of those things, but in the moment when the wheels fall off and you are very activated and your lid is flipped and you're, you know, you got all of the cortisol rushing through your veins, it's hard for us to hang on to ourselves. Just yesterday, I had a message on Instagram from a mom who's like, listen, I've read your book. I've done the course. I want to show up for my child in the best way. And I yell at him every single day. And I hate myself. I don't know why I keep doing this. I want so desperately to stop. She's motivated. She knows all of the things and she can't hang on to herself. And that's where consciousness and doing that, like, inner work of shifting your beingness becomes, that's the rate limiting step.
Do you feel like you have shifted your beingness at this point in your life?
I think that our job in life is to be defeated by ever greater challenges until the moment we take our last breath. Mm. And so I can speak from my own experience. I feel like I have shifted the narrative for myself somewhat through a lot of dark nights and a lot of, you know, knees on the ground, begging for change kinds of moments. And I am challenged still on a daily basis to reconsider why a feeling has come up in me. Where does that truly come from? What is that truly about? Is it connected to the present moment or does it travel back to a previous time? Like, what is that all about? And so, you know, I think if I had to put it into words, where I was once an actor in my life, I now am an observer and an actor. So I get to be curious about it.
Mm. It sounds like that's where probably in the reflection of in reflecting maybe after the fact, or are you able to reflect during? So like the heat of the cortisol is rushing, the heat of the moment, all the things are happening, your feelings are hurt, or you're just feeling frustrated, you're feeling overwhelmed, are you able to reflect in that moment? Or do you find that most of the time the reflection happens way after the moment, or kind of what's that like for you?
Yeah. Sometimes I'm not able to do it at all in the moment if I'm really lid flipped. Like if I'm super fired up, then no.
Yeah.
Most of the time, I feel like I have this like additional eyeball, you know, that like hangs out over top of me. And as I'm in the middle of it, I'm like, oh, check you out, girl. Yeah, you just said that. Mm-hmm. You went past the line. Oh, we just went past the line. Like yeah. I can kind of watch myself. And I also have, like, I have a lot of go-tos in terms of things that I might do to allow myself to come up and out of whatever that moment is. But I'll tell you something really honestly. I can be in a moment where I'm, you know, going off about something. And I know we're never upset for the reasons we think. It's always going to hark back to something else that I'm going to have all this work to do. Like you can hear my tone and I'm like, la, la, la. Okay, yeah, cool.
Right.
I feel like I'm kind of like giving the middle finger salute to all of those things in that moment. Like I know that they're there, but I just am not ready yet. Yeah. Like I need to go right down to the bottom of being angry right now. And then I'll bounce back and come up. And sometimes I do it on purpose. Like I'll give myself a couple days before I'll go in and work an issue within myself so that I have a little bit of space and a little bit of time to really do good work.
What? And none of these questions are on the script. I have a whole... As I'm listening, I am relating a lot to you, and I want to also really help those out there who are also relating to you. Like I know the things, I follow the podcasts, but like sometimes like I'm just like, and also too, like I see, you know, as we're talking about us as adults, like I see this, I work with children and I see the same thing happening in children. And so like sometimes like I, and even myself, like I also will be like in mid maybe lecture or doing a thing and like, ah, man, I definitely know better than this. But I'm doing the thing like, and I kind of become a little bit of an observer of myself. And then I have to make the choice to switch it. And, you know, I sometimes don't always make the choice. And I think, you know, but for you, I want to ask, you know, sometimes you choose, like, I will just choose to be in that state, be there for a couple of days. Yeah. What inspires you to kind of make the choice to decide to, okay, I'm going to do the thing that is, I know is going to be helpful for me or helpful for my child or helpful for whoever I'm trying to either support or work with or communicate with, cooperate with, collaborate with. What gets you there to decide to make that choice? Like where, what is that for you? Can you pinpoint that?
Yeah. I'm not sure. And I think it's this. I think the idea of not growing, of staying stagnant, of sitting in the mess of it and not really figuring it out feels hopeless to me. It feels like a death of sorts. Like I'm not trying anymore. I've thrown in the towel and this is it. This is it. Status quo and go. And I don't know that I can, that does not resonate with me and how I go. I feel like when I am investing in myself, I am creating a hopeful existence for myself on this planet. And from that place of hopefulness, I can go forward and be a light maker, be the change that I want to see in the world. And the alternate possibility is very unpalatable.
So you kind of have this hope that there's something almost kind of like better on the other side of whether it's growth, or maybe closer relationship, or being able to solve the problem, and your awareness, your consciousness of that at some point inspires you, like, okay, let me try to figure this out, and let me not just stay in here. I know that I can. I know I can't stay in here. I've been here for 2-3 days now, but let me make a different choice, and let me try to figure this out. Is that about what you're saying?
Yeah. And that nothing in our lives, my belief is, nothing in our lives is random, ever. Mm-hmm. Like if you behave in a moment with a child, and you're not, or with a colleague or whomever, and you're just not feeling great about how that went down, the first thing to understand is that it was meant to happen that way. And how do I know that? Because it happened that way. Like, none of it's random. It happens for you. Those moments of challenge happen for you and not to you. And so if that's true, if we accept that as a basic premise of how we show up as human beings, that it's all happening for us, then we get to think, oh, what is the gold to be mined from this situation? What is the opportunity that has just landed in my lap? How is it that I get to accept this present of the present moment and move forward from there?
Yeah. And that can be difficult in itself, to really accept this moment of conflict, this challenging moment that probably doesn't feel good, as mm-hmm. really a gift and a mm-hmm. present for you, and maybe even maybe I would say a call to learn something, to grow a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I gotta say, it has definitely been the moments of conflict that have, for me, you know, pushed me to learn more, to grow more. And that is so true. I resonate with that. Okay, let's go back on script. Okay. So I want to know about your journey, right? Okay. And about how you came to be Dr. Vanessa LaPointe, and this international sensation who is helping parents kind of all over the world with their challenges and their struggles. Did you start off as a perfect parent, and it just went on from there? That had to be what it was. You've been perfect for your entire life. Yeah.
Just sparkling away over here, and thought I would just share some of the glitz and glamour with y'all. You know, right.
Yeah. Go ahead. Tell us what really happened.
It really wasn't that way.
Yeah.
At all. In fact, you know, when they say those who can do, and those who can't teach, or maybe a slightly more elevated expression, we only teach what we have to learn. And I feel, for me, you know, I went to grad school and I got the degrees and I did the things. And the real learning for me came when those things did not line up for me as a mother. Like, it was all very formulaic before I had children, and we all do our best parenting before we have children. Speaking from personal experience. And then I had my babies, and, you know, the thought of doing to them the kinds of behavioral interventions that I had been coached along as a student, I couldn't reconcile it. There was something about it that felt inherently wrong. And so it got challenging in my marriage, because I had not voiced those things at the beginning. Mm. And so my co-parent didn't agree with that, you know, super soft approach to parenting. Kids grow up spoiled rotten if they're that way. And so I had to really figure out, who am I as a parent? And how does that line up with what I have studied? And I was really challenged to come up with explanations for why I wanted to do things a certain way with our children. And from there, it actually shifted the entire way that I understand development, the entire way that I practice as a psychologist. And it's those kinds of struggles, like grinding through it and trying to figure out why it doesn't feel good, and put some science to that, but has landed me present day in the roles that I'm in, speaking about the things that I speak about, engaging with parents in the manner that I engage with them. Everything has shifted. I basically had to unlearn all of my training and retrain truly aligned with the science of child development.
So let me ask you, what were you trained in that felt like icky to you? What was the traditional psychology that just did you had to unlearn? Tell us about that. And maybe even if you have a story about when you tried it or when you did it and you just, what was that moment of realization? Talk to us about that.
So if I had to put a name to it, although it wouldn't have been called this, what I would call it now retrospectively is that I was trained as a behaviorist.
Yeah.
So the classic, you don't like the behavior, you squash it. Without a lot of thought to what is the cost of the squashing, without a lot of thought to how does that line up with neurological development? How does that line up with a child's individual needs and abilities? There wasn't a lot of space and room for all of that. There were just these, like, you know, if they're not doing what they're supposed to do, then you do this to them and then they will bend to you kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you know, it would get flowered up so that it felt a little prettier. But if you cook it all down to the core, that's really what was backing and driving that training. And then my son was born, my first son. And well, first of all, if you'd seen him as a baby, like, he was impossible not to just melt over, the cutest little thing ever.
Yeah.
And he didn't love sleeping. Like, really didn't love sleeping. And so then the pressure was on. Ironically, as a doctoral student, I had worked as a research assistant in a lab with a national sleep expert. And she had said a lot of things to me, like, get him out of your room by this time and make sure that you sleep train by this age and do all these things. And I was getting a lot of pressure from the people around me to sleep train my baby. And I bent to that pressure. One night when he was 5 months old, I put him in his crib and I walked out of the bedroom and I closed his door. Even telling it to you right now, I can feel the emotion come up in me. And I slid down that door, sobbing as a mother. And I stayed there for an hour trying to reconcile with myself as my baby screamed his head off and threw up in his crib and was completely out of his mind, dysregulated, trying to convince myself that this was the right thing to do. All of the scientists say it's fine. Yeah. And I just couldn't sustain it. Yeah. And so I broke. I went back in, I scooped my baby up, and I never put him down again. I mean, I did. And you want to know what? He's 19. He's off at his first year of university. He came home 4 days ago for the holiday break. That child sleeps like 20 hours a day right now. So it's not like he's got a sleep problem. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, it all worked out. I also remember I was on doctoral internship when he was, you know, in the terrific twos kind of stage. And I was being trained. So there was an outside organization that had come in. I worked for a public agency at the time. And we were all meant to be trained in this certain approach to behavior management, which shall remain unnamed. So I went home and I was like, okay, well, if this is the be all end all, and this is, you know, the gold standard, what we're supposed to do. And I remember when he was about 2.5 and we were out at a shopping mall. Why anybody ever goes to a shopping mall? Because it's like the worst place on earth to go with your young children. And he'd had enough. Obviously, he's 2.5 years old. So he was over it and he was not cooperating. And so I remember sitting him down on the edge of this little curb and putting him in a timeout. And then, as I had been trained to do, stepping away from him close enough that he was safe and turning my back to him to withdraw attention. And then I was like throwing up in my mouth, like, what is this? This is horrible. So I scooped my baby up and off we went home. And it was right around, like, I would say probably within a month of that, that I began studying Gordon Neufeld's work and Dan Siegel's work. Mm-hmm. I really got connected to the concept of attachment, the idea of co-regulation, like all of the ways that it works for children to actually grow, to not be broken, but to actually grow.
So, okay, tell us about, we heard about what was the parts, how you were trained, what gave you the ick. And now I want to hear about kind of as you found Gordon Neufeld's work and you're starting to maybe feel like get ahas and your world is opening, you're starting to know better. And I know there is the phrase, and I, you know, I love the phrase, but I feel like it's incomplete. We say when you know better, you do better. But I think knowing better is only one part of the process of doing better. But you start to learn all this new information, which is where probably maybe a lot of listeners right now are at. Like, I'm learning, my perspective is expanding. It's different than what I, you know, learned before, was raised. Now tell me about the process of you starting to do this different way of parenting.
Yeah, you know, it's not been a straight line at all.
Yeah.
I would say you have to have a lot of faith in understanding that you are growing a deep root system and that the tree will eventually bear fruit. But not until the root system is really well established. And that takes a long time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I do feel like once I had those aha moments, I couldn't unsee what had been presented to me, like what had clicked. I couldn't unsee that. What I did observe is that when I wasn't okay, my children weren't okay. And so it became increasingly on my heart that I needed to grow myself in order to grow them. And in growing myself, understand that my children don't make me upset. I make me upset. That as a grown adult, at least in form, if not internally yet, as a grown adult, happiness is an inside job. It was on me to go inside and figure out where that was all coming from. It wasn't on my children to behave better. And miraculously, over time, because they're 15 going on 16 and almost 19 years of age now. And, you know, I think a lot of people hear, oh, so you just like, cool, release them to the flowery meadows, like give them all sorts of love and connection and all these things, like grow yourself and you'll grow them. And then like, they just like listen to you and like, they're fine. And yes. And no, you know, like it's really having to try on for size, how that all feels in real time, and then trust that when the wheels fall off, that your beingness will allow you to be there and do the things that are required. My boys are very unique from one another. One of them has some pretty extraordinary learning exceptionalities and a hearing loss and a bunch of that, and is a gifted, stunningly gifted musician, and incredibly different from his brother. So there was no one size fits all. It was constantly sniffing the air around them and adjusting and flexing to their needs, and accepting myself as the mom who's got the degree and who wrote the books and who just lost her shizzle again and now needs to make that right with her children and find a way to move forward from there. And so it's been, you know, like when you invest in mutual funds, like the overall curve is like this. But if you look at the granular curve, it's kind of like this.
Yeah.
I would say that characterizes my journey.
Yeah. Yeah. For those listening, the first this was like a slanted line. And the next this was like an up and down line. I don't like mountains. And
mountainous.
We think that growth, and we think or we hope that growth is just this straight slanted line going up, but that is just not what it is at all. And it's important to have that understanding so we don't have unrealistic expectations of what this is going to be like. Like, yeah, sometimes you're going to mess up. You're going to feel like you've regressed and you know, you've had a bad day, you've had a bad week, had a bad month. But if you keep on continuing to learn and grow and you don't give up and you really take those mistakes, those mess ups, those oops as opportunities to problem solve, opportunities to learn, it will continue to go up. Yeah, I love that. So I want to ask you kind of on the practical side of this, like just give us some, in your journey, what did you feel like were some tips or some tools or some anything that you felt like, oh, this actually worked better than I thought it was going to work, or wow, this actually is really effective. Give us a couple of those of just like, yeah. Oh, this, every parent needs to have this tool in the back pocket. Have any of those?
I'm gonna give you my two biggest.
Okay, please. Yep.
The number one has to do with when you're in a moment, and you know what I mean by moment, like it's not going well, and it could be with your child, it could be with your partner, it could be with whomever. And there's a big happening. And for ease of discussion, I'll go with a child example. So let's say the child is having a meltdown, or they just clobbered their sibling, or there's something of that nature playing out. Your job is not to solve that problem. So if I can give you one giant tip in that hot moment, retreat. Where do you retreat to? Relationship. So the story that I opened my first book with, Discipline Without Damage, is I'm at a play place. You know, those like indoor, germy, cesspool, disgusting crowd, way overstimulating, smelly.
Grew up there.
So it's a rainy, I live on the west coast of Canada, like basically in a rainforest, and it rains 9 months of the year here. And so it was one of those days, and we were, going a bit stir crazy at home. And so we decided we would go to this play place. And my youngest son was 4 years old at the time. He's running amok. I can't even fit into all the nooks and crannies that he's running around. So I'm just trying to like keep an eye on him. Meanwhile, all the moms from my older son's brand new school are lined up with their children doing the same thing. So I have an audience. And you know the pressure as a parent when you have an audience. And out runs my sweet little boy, who's like a tank. I don't grow him delicate. He runs out of the play area. He's running down the center console, like barreling towards me. So I like bend down, brace for impact. I can tell he's upset. Like he's all sweaty and red and his hair stuck to his forehead with sweat. And he looks like he's, you know, not okay. So I scoop him up and I say something like, "You're having a really rough time." And as I do that, he arches his back. He takes his little hand and he plows my face. Punches me right in the nose, which I had previously broken my nose. So when you get a previously broken nose smashed again, it actually really hurts.
Yeah.
So there I am trying to hang on to myself, and I've got like the snotty nose thing happening. And I immediately drop a flag for him from a space of relationship. A flag is 5 words or less. Gentle hands. I let him know, like, that's done. And I'm moving into connection now. So we're going to retreat to relationship. Gentle hands, I remind him, and you're really frustrated. "No, I'm mad." "That's right. You're really mad. It's tricky when you're really mad. And mommy's right here and I've got you." So all I want him to feel now is that he's seen and heard. That's what it is to retreat to relationship, make him feel seen and heard. Mm-hmm. "I've got you. We're going to go get you a glass of water. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da." And so I move through all of that connection with him. Now I can feel him leaning into me. I sit down on the chair. And then perfect mommy, who's standing right beside me, decides that I need a little advice. So she's like, "You know, at our house, we find timeouts to be very effective." And I was like, oh, out loud. Like she literally just said that to me. So I counted to 10. I took a few deep breaths. And then I just responded with a simple, "Well, at our house, we parent with connection. I got this." And left it. I'll tell you what, I didn't bring that up with my son ever again. Like, I didn't put him in the car and remind him how naughty he'd been. I didn't talk to his dad about it over the dinner table, nothing. Two nights later, he's 4-ish years old. We're going to bed. I'm reading him a story in bed. And he reaches over to me, like, very urgently with his little chubby preschool hands. And he cups my face, like, really intently like this. And he says to me, "Mommy." And I say, "Yeah." And he says, "I hit you. And you loved me." Mm. 2 days later. And then he said, "I'm sorry."
Oh.
What did he learn? Did he learn I can plow my mom in the face and she doesn't do anything about it? Mm-mm. He learned what it is to be gracious with people. He learned what it is to be generous. He learned what it is to be loved. And in turn, begins to reflect that back to the world around. So number one, retreat to relationship. Number two is to, so this, that was child focused. Now we're going to get you focused because you have a role to play in this. And number two would be that you get to check yourself. And what I mean by that is everything's a story. And so for your listeners right now, I'm wearing this very bright pink sweater today. And you could look at my bright pink sweater and you could be like, yes, yes, and yes, so good. I love the color. I love that it's so bright at a dreary time of year. Like, it's amazing. You're killing it. Or you could look at my bright pink sweater and be like, I don't know. Like, aren't you supposed to be a professional? And that's kind of a little loud and garish. And like, you might want to turn the volume down a bit and people might take you more seriously. Either way, you're right. If that's what you believe, you're right. That will be your experience of it. If you were staring at me for an hour and I was wearing a sweater you didn't like, you'd be like, oh, ugh, somebody changed the view, right? Yeah. Switch the channel. Yeah. If it's the other way around, you'll have a different experience. And so we get to accept responsibility for our thoughts, knowing that everything is a story. And if we don't like the story that we be telling ourselves, we can choose again and again and again. Because if we're making it all up, you might as well tell yourself a story with a happy ending.
Mm. I like that. I'm going to push back a little bit on that. I don't know if it's a pushback, but more just a question to dive deeper into it.
Yeah.
Of... yeah, when you're in a certain state or you're really upset or it's the sixth time you've been punched that day, it becomes harder to tell that story with the happy ending.
Oh yeah. You curse that story.
You what it?
You curse it. Like, yeah. You're angry at that story. Yeah. Don't tell me that story.
Right.
That's toxic positivity.
So what do we do here in these moments? Okay, I can choose. All right, Vanessa, Dr. Vanessa, I hear you. I get to choose a story that I tell myself. I am, at first, I'm saying, you're just a good kid having a hard time. You're just a good kid having a hard time. Maybe you need a relationship. Maybe you need, you know, something's, you know, off with the routine. I'm telling the story. But at some point, I'm feeling your behavior's got to change. This is unacceptable. And, you know, you're at this right now, I'm coming up with a lot of other stories that don't really see necessarily a child in the best light. Like, maybe I was earlier in the day. Maybe I was at
earlier in the year.
Yeah, right. Right. Maybe at 10 o'clock, I was able to tell the story at 2 o'clock. I was able to, at 5 o'clock, I was able to, but by the time it's bedtime, just get your jammies on and lay down and chill out and go to sleep. And like, how do we keep telling ourselves, how do we still see this child in a positive light when we feel beat down?
Yeah. And I think that we have to accept ourselves in that moment as the grown-up who's kind of lost the plot.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's okay to lose the plot. Like, welcome to the club and welcome to having a heartbeat and welcome to the human condition. When we get all down on ourselves and beat ourselves up and don't have grace for ourselves, then we're going to empty the cup even further and then we're really going to be in trouble. And so I like to think about giving ourselves a little bit of space. And that brings me to a phrase that my beautiful friend, Ranbir Kaur, who's a life coach, and she has all these like gorgeous things that she says where I'm like, where did this come from? What book of life have you been reading? And she has this line that's so brilliant. One of my other girlfriends has it now tattooed on her forearm. And the line is that you have to faith it, not fake, faith it until you make it. And I have often been heard saying to parents, like, you've got to keep the faith. You can and will come through this moment. The darkness of right now will lift and the sun will come out. Maybe not in 5 minutes, maybe not in 5 hours, and maybe not in 5 days. And it will. We faith it until we make it. There's no faking because we're all going to be very real.
Faith and we until are gonna, you make it. Faith until you make faith. It. Like it.
And I love the work of Byron Katie in that, where she says, you can argue with reality and you will be wrong, but only 100% of the time. So if the child has hit you 6 times and you're saying, you shouldn't hit me 6 times, but it just happened.
Yeah.
They just hit you 6 times.
Yeah.
So if you want to be crazy, argue with that.
Yeah.
Because you'll make yourself crazy. You can argue with reality and you will be wrong only 100% of the time. So we accept it. We accept, okay, that's the 6th time today. And then we start to dig into what's behind the hitting. How can we understand, as a developmentalist, how can we understand who is this child? What is going on for this child? What about the environment? What about their needs? What about how they're going and flowing on a Monday compared to a Wednesday, from a morning compared to an afternoon? What about all of that needs some tending to so that the child can be regulated? And also in that, what have I got going on? Am I at the top of the mountain right now, holding firm and kind in a balanced space? Or have I kind of lost the plot a little bit? Have I devolved into being a jellyfish, or have I devolved into being a bully? And if I have, then that's on me. Then I need to climb back up the mountain and reorient to what it is to have firm and kind existing in a balanced way within myself so that I can show up with a very safe, very caring presence for this child.
I love that. I'm going to ask you about your first tip about returning to connection, or just really any additional advice on how to retreat to connection, how to connect.
Yeah.
What does that look like? I don't know, you gave us an example, you gave us a story, but just even just some general things that will help us with connecting, because we all got, there's always different children in front of us. Any tips on connection? And I got one more question. I guess kind of a big question, but I got one more question.
Okay.
After that, go ahead.
Let's do it. So, I mean, I could talk for hours and hours on tips on connection. So I'll give you some of my sort of the big pieces of what it would sound and look like. The first would be, when they go high, you go low. And what I mean by that is your job is not to jump into the mess, but to be a safe witness to what it is that's going on for the child. So you stay on the outside of it. You don't jump into it. You don't become dysregulated yourself, because if we believe in co-regulation and then you become dysregulated, then we all in trouble. So stay on the outside, be a safe witness. They've gone high, so you're going to go low. But just don't be weird about going low. Do you know? This is not one of those things where you're like, what I think you're saying is you're really frustrated and you get kind of flat and weird and detached. You be passionate about being compassionate. I see you and I hear you. And this is hard. Being a big brother is hard. I totally get that. You know what, sweetie? If I were you right now, I'd be really mad too. That's a tricky thing that's just happened. So I'm not There's no blame and shame, and there's no, I'm not coming at him in any way. He's gone high, I've gone low, and I've been passionate about how I've gone low.
Yeah.
The other piece is, you know, when you are, whether it's a child or a grown up, when somebody's circling and they're dysregulated and it's loud and it's a little topsy-turvy, think about yourself as like a sports commentator where they want to be seen and heard. That's what everybody wants at the end of the day, seen and heard. And so how do you see and hear a child who cannot in that moment see and hear themselves? That's where the narration comes in. The sports commentating, you're really mad. You wanted a yes and I gave you a no. This isn't going the way that you thought. The drawing doesn't look the way that you wanted. You're just putting, and the words don't matter. Like you could be reciting the Lord's Prayer if you wanted. It's the tone and it's the presence and it's giving them the eyes and it's being being that safe witness to them so that they know that you've got them.
Yeah.
And then the other piece would be to never make them responsible in that moment for anything that you've got going on, which means that you won't say things like, that hurt my feelings. You really upset me. You really scared me. We stay out of that because now we're making it about us. We want to just be really available. So when we're in the moment of connection and relationship, we are available to the child and their needs, and we hold on to ourselves as capable adults with our needs. So we don't make that the child's responsibility. Rather, what we're saying to the child is that there is never, so you're giving them this experience in that moment, there is nothing that you could ever say, think, or do that would mess things up for you and I. Nothing. You could blow this building up and I will love you to the end of time.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I actually said something similar to a student of mine, and she brought it up 2 weeks later during a moment that was like hard for her. And I just remember it, you know, she didn't, in the time when I was talking to her, because she was, I said it during a time that she was having another hard moment. She wasn't super responsive to it, but it was something that clearly impacted her a lot. She brought it up and really, she brought it up actually a couple of times. And it was during other hard moments. I'm like, I got you. Like, no matter what you're going through, like, I got you. No matter what you did, like, I would be here for you. I'd be here keeping you safe. That, like, that is my job. Mm-hmm. So yeah, very powerful stuff. So I want to ask you, last question, big question. I want to know, you mentioned before we started recording that you, in your words, blew up your life. And I want to know, kind of, can you tell us a little bit about that? And I want to hear, because we've been talking about these hard moments, these hard times being our opportunities for learning and growth. I want to hear what that was like for you, why you did it, but also what did you feel like you kind of learned from that experience?
You love this question. And to answer it, I'm going to start with a story.
Okay.
So I had a deadline from my editor when I was writing my first book. The very final chapter had to be in by Monday morning, and it was Sunday afternoon. And my then husband agreed with me that I would take some time in our home office to polish off that chapter. I want to remind you, as I tell the story, that the book was called Discipline Without Damage. Without damage. While I'm in my home office writing away, I hear this blood-curdling scream come from the backyard. The kind of scream that sounds like your child's arms are being torn off his body. So I go running to see, like, what is happening and what does he need. And the scene that I walk in upon, it was early spring, so it's still very chilly. and the air is cold, and certainly the water that's sitting in the garden hose is borderline freezing cold. My son was on the trampoline, all zipped in, you know, those contained trampolines that have the, and he had been refusing to help his dad clean up the yard. And I'm not telling this story to vilify his dad. I'm telling this story to really open a window in on the experience of what it is to be a helping professional and to be living a life exactly opposite of what you are teaching about on the stage. So I get into the backyard. My son's trapped in the trampoline by his dad, who's very upset with him because he will not help clean up the yard. And he is being hosed down with freezing cold water from the garden hose that's been sitting all winter, screaming, like terrified out of his mind. He doesn't know what's happening. He doesn't know why this person who's supposed to be his person, the one that keeps him safe, is doing this to him. And he is, I mean, beyond desperate to escape the situation. That is one story of many others that played out over time. A week after that book released in January of 2016, we had our first discussion about splitting up. From there, over the following 11 months, there were five more such discussions. And that marriage ended largely because of those kinds of situations, very suddenly and quite violently, 11 months after that book released. The book called Discipline Without Damage. And I was mortified. The kind of shame that I carried, knowing that I was living what I felt like was a double life, was crushing. I went inward. I didn't tell my parents, even who I'm very close with, for 4 weeks that the marriage had ended. I didn't tell friends. I did not speak a word of it to anybody in my professional world. I just turtled. And then I realized, okay, I got to stand up and brush off, and I got to figure out, like, what just happened? First of all, how did I end up in this situation? Not why did he do that? How did I end up in this situation? What was my piece in all of this? Where was it that I needed to have stepped in a different kind of way? How might I have stepped in differently? Where was I selling myself short? Where was I codepending my partner? Where was I codependending my life? How did that all happen? And what was in that for me? And as I was working through, it was that was a really challenging time. I lost most of my hair. I didn't sleep for months. I was a very altered version of self. And ironically, I had a colleague who had been connected to an organization that I had a long history with. And he was finally coming around to the night that he would present his big talk to them and to all of the parents in that community. And I had said that I would come out and listen to his talk because I had set up the relationship between he and that organization. He brought with him that night a counselor who is this incredibly wise woman, an older lady who's, you know, been to the bottom and found her way back up in life. And of note, that night was the first night that I had to sleep outside the family home. And I didn't want anyone to know. So I had suitcases in the back of my car, and I had found a couch that I was going to go and sleep on that night. And as we left the building, my colleague and myself and his counselor who had come with them, she's more like a mentor and a teacher to him. I had files with me from work. And so, of course, we can't leave those in our car. And so I had to open the trunk of my car while they were standing there to put the files in. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, they're going to see the suitcases. They're going to know that I'm a sham. Fast forward 3 months, I signed up to do work with that woman. She is my teacher and counselor to this day. I just did a session with her for 3 hours on Saturday. And what I got to do was understand, okay, I feel a lot of shame and a lot of guilt. I could blame that on my children's father, or I could go inside and see how that was for me and not to me. And if I thought that I had something to say previously about discipline without damage, I'll tell you what, I got a lot more to say about it now. And from a place that's full of light and full of love and full of compassion for my kid's dad, as well as for all the big people out in the world who are really well-intentioned people with beautiful, beautiful hearts who just can't figure it out and find themselves resorting to, you know, old school kind of tactics that are full of damaging kinds of experiences for kids. I really got to unearth a lot of that. I got to go into my narratives. I got to understand, you know, when my children would come back from their dad's place and they would be super rejecting of me. And then I'd get really angry about it. Like, I gave you life. And you're going to come home and I've been yearning to see you for 5 days. And now you're going to act like this. I'll tell you what, right? And so I got to work all the thoughts around that. Sometimes 50, 60 times a day, I would go into my head and I would pull up a thought. Maxwell should not speak to me that way. Maxwell's my son. Maxwell should speak to me that way. Why? Because he is. This is Byron Katie's work. And then I begin to play with the thought. How could the thought be different? What other thought might be truer than that thought? Well, of course, Maxwell should speak to me that way. His whole life just fell apart. It's his job right now to let me know that he's not doing well and that he needs a little bit of scooping up. And so I really feel like, you know, that expression, only the wounded healer heals. I really feel like I got to, not I had to, I got to go through all of that hell, and it has been hell at times, to really figure out what is my truth and why am I here. And it has completely shifted the way that I see children and also the way that I see humans. We are all so much more than the worst thing that we have ever done.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?